I'm grateful for the fact that they didn't find that I had directly threatened them. That would have been really uncomfortable for me and bad for me.
The legislature reprimands a state senator. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 2nd of March. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, it turns out wolves eat farther down the food chain than biologists thought.
There's another player on the stage, and it's a fish. And to wolf biologists, that's a pretty big leap.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Angoon Senator Albert Kukesh has been slapped with a state ethics violation over comments he made in January at a Craig City Council meeting. A Senate Ethics Subcommittee found that Kukesh implied that he would use his legislative power to block state funding for community projects if the Craig City Council opposed legislation he was supporting. KRBD's Deanna Garrison reports.
The Democratic senator represents Craig and the majority of communities on Prince of Wales Island. He also serves as chairman of the Sea Alaska Board of Directors. Kukesh was lobbying the Craig City Council on behalf of Sea Alaska when he made the comments in question on January 7th.
I'm the state senator who represents Craig. I'm not a vindictive person. I see you're going to have your 2010 capital projects on the table here tonight. And who's it going to go to? It's going to go to me and to Bill Thomas, who's also a Sea Alaska board member. We have to be good neighbors. There are times you're going to need my help and Bill Thomas' help, and this is a time where we need yours.
The Craig City Council at that meeting was deciding whether to send a letter of concern about Sea Alaska's lands bill to Alaska's congressional delegation. The community's wish list for state capital projects was also on that night's agenda. Following the meeting, former Craig Mayor Dennis Watson filed an ethics complaint against Kukesh. The complaint alleges that Kukesh used his position as a state senator in an attempt to force the Craig City Council to vote favorably on an issue that would provide Sea Alaska with considerable financial gain. Watson says he believes Kukesh was threatening the Craig Council.
I spent 24 years in a very public forum. And I can tell when something is a threat and when it is not.
The subcommittee found that Kukesh violated state ethics laws by implying that he would use his power as senator to block state funding for Craig capital projects without a favorable council vote on the federal Sea Alaska land issue. Gary Turner is chair of the Senate subcommittee for the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics.
The subcommittee did find probable cause that Senator Kukesh did violate the statute by implying basically a quid pro quo because of his tenure on the Sea Alaska board and as a state senator.
Much of the information collected during the actual investigation remains confidential. However, the subcommittee did report that it interviewed Kukesh and says the senator fully cooperated. While the subcommittee found that Kukesh violated the state's ethics statute, it found no evidence that the senator actually gained any advantage from his statements. The Craig City Council eventually voted to send a letter to Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski outlining the city's concerns with the Sea Alaska legislation. The subcommittee decided against ordering sanctions and instead recommended that Kukesh be required to write a letter of public apology on his official legislative letterhead to the city of Craig. The letter must state that he accepts responsibility for a poor choice of words and detailed the implied threat. The subcommittee says a letter must be concise, factual, and address the ethics violation and nothing more. Kukesh is not allowed to debate whether he agrees with the findings nor how his words may have been misconstrued. He has 20 days to comply. Kukesh says he had no intention of threatening the Craig Council, but acknowledges he should have chosen his words more carefully.
I'm grateful for the fact that they didn't find that I had directly threatened them. That would have been really uncomfortable for me and bad for me, because I don't think I intended to do that. I didn't intend to threaten anybody. I just thought that it would have been bad if they had fined some that wasn't an implied threat. But the statute allows for an implied threat.
State statute prohibits a legislator from directly or indirectly threatening or implying that they will withhold a legislative action as a result of a person's decision to provide or not provide a thing of value. Kukesh says he has and will continue to push for state funding for his entire district, including Craig.
My whole reason for saying what I said was in terms of trying to get people on, at least in that area, to work together. And that was my whole reason for saying what I did. I wanted people to work together. And I even made the statement then that nobody else has a plan for Prince of Wales Island, and we have one.
Watson wasn't the only person at the January 7th meeting to voice concerns about Kukesh's comments. Craig City Council member and Sea Alaska shareholder Mike Duville spoke out shortly after the meeting, saying he also believed Kukesh threatened the council.
I felt that he could slow down our projects or not be as helpful as he could, I guess is what my impression was.
Kukesh is the first senator this year to be found in violation of the state ethics law. A second ethics complaint was filed against Kukesh for similar comments made in Sitka. The subcommittee dismissed that complaint, which alleged he misused his legislative power while speaking before the Sitka Assembly. In Ketchikan, I'm Deanna Garrison.
House and Senate committees today opened debate on the state's response to a U.S. Supreme Court decision opening political campaigns to corporations and labor unions as an extension of the federally guaranteed right to free speech. House State Affairs Chairman Bob Lynn, a Republican from Anchorage, said the decision has been a political earthquake felt throughout the nation.
How it affects candidates for various offices is not really as important as how it affects Mr. and Mrs. Alaska. Very, very serious situation. Here we have corporations. We know make independent expenditures. Most of them have deep pockets and so on. But again, this is about how it affects the people, because the folks that they elect to public offices, the various initiatives that are passed, affect all of us.
Bills in the House and Senate focus on requiring disclosure of who is making independent contributions in election issues and races. And they also require disclaimers be incorporated into advertisements. State Attorney John Patasson says the Supreme Court decision invalidated Alaska's ban on corporate involvement in elections.
The real question, and I think what a lot of the legislators this session are trying to understand, is how do we follow the money from person to person down into the actual act of speech? And I think that's what these bills are trying to address.
Members of both committees recognize the bills probably don't address remedies to all the campaign financing issues the state could face. But Judiciary Chair Hollis French, an Anchorage Democrat, says they're a good start.
I'm certain that this bill is not going to stay in its present form for more than a few years before we have to react to whatever that's going to come to us this fall. But it's, you know, my belief that we need to get something on the books, at least to put up a little bulwark.
The House State Affairs Committee held its version of the bill for possible amendments. The Senate version was approved unanimously and sent to the Judiciary Committee, where a hearing is scheduled for Monday. The U.S. Senate has reached a deal that will allow it to move forward and soon reinstate unemployment benefits. Since Thursday, Republican Kentucky Senator Jim Bunning had single-handedly blocked the short-term extension of unemployment benefits and other popular measures. But this evening, he accepted a deal to allow the $10 billion aid bill to advance. Bunning's stance put Senator Lisa Murkowski and her fellow Republican colleagues in a politically awkward spot, while Democrats like Senator Mark Begich railed against the holdup. Programs that expired over the weekend include long-term unemployment benefits, health care subsidies for the unemployed, highway funds, and a measure that boosted Medicare payments to doctors. In Alaska, the halt in federal highway money put two projects on hold for a couple of days, construction on the Kaufman Cove dock and a road cleanup project in the Tongass National Forest. The federal highway employees overseeing the projects have been put on furlough. State transportation projects with federal funding haven't been affected, according to Jeff Otteson with the Alaska Department of Transportation. He says the state is not getting weekly federal reimbursement to the tune of about $4 million, but the money should eventually come in once Congress moves forward. In the meantime, Otteson says the projects have proceeded with state funds.
What's affecting state-managed projects is we're still able to do the work. What's being delayed is that reimbursement process.
But Otteson says DOT could not move forward on new projects. That's because employees in the Juneau office of the Federal Highway Administration have been on furlough and couldn't give the projects a green light.
For projects that we need approval to start, either a design start or a construction start, we'll keep sending them over there, but they'll be in their, you know, basically their mailbox waiting for them to return to work.
Senator Bunning was blocking the federal funding because he wanted the $10 billion aid package paid for with stimulus funds rather than adding to the national debt. His fellow Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski did not respond to requests for comment today about Bunning's action. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a proposal to help more foster kids go to college.
For youth to even graduate high school when coming out of the foster care system is a huge accomplishment. So they should have the incentive to be provided with something for post-secondary education.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Finn Air, with 50 years of flying experience and offering charter service throughout Alaska and the United States. Details online at finnair.com. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
The Regulatory Commission of Alaska has denied a request by NSTAR Natural Gas to recover a $5.7 million billing error. The company had asked the commission to retroactively approve a rate hike the company made in January 2009. NSTAR overcharged Fort Richardson Army Post for 10 times as much gas as the Army used at its laundry over a five-year period from 2002 to 2007. The company later repaid the Department of Defense. NSTAR said the higher gas volume resulted in lower prices to individual consumers and that they should pay because the gas was used in its system and left unpaid. The RCA ordered NSTAR to refund the extra charges it has made to customers. The company can appeal in Alaska Superior Court. Wolves like to eat moose and caribou. That's a given. Ungulates are by far their favorite prey. But a new study shows wolves also eat a lot of salmon where it's available, even in interior Alaska. The research could transform the way biologists and managers think about how all of the species interact in the ecosystem. APRN's Annie Feit has the story.
The spark for Lane Adams' new research came back in the 1990s. The U.S. Geological Survey biologist was tracking radio-collared wolves in the interior with the help of a pilot.
One day he called me on the phone and he said, you know, I don't even need the radios to find those wolves. I fly out to Diamond, which is a fall chum spawning area, and he says, they're there. He said, you turn on the radio anytime in the fall, you know, from September to December, so they're there.
Biologists knew wolves ate salmon. But the pilot's observation got Adams wondering just how much. To find out, he needed to analyze the protein from wolf bones. In a lucky break, colleagues of his had carefully preserved 70 from a Denali National Park study that dated back to the 1980s. It was too perfect.
Wow, not only do we have bone, but we've got bone from these wolves that were radio collared that we know where they live.
When the samples came back, the results were surprising. In areas of the park where there were lots of ungulates, the wolves were eating about 8% salmon. But where ungulates were more scarce in the northwest corner of Denali, that number jumped to 17%.
You know, I started to come to the conclusion or realization that having all this salmon available to them could certainly jack up the wolf population. And as long as the wolves are more interested in eating moose than eating salmon, they can actually, it can result in increased predation rates on moose. And, you know, that's kind of what we're speculating, that's part of the explanation for low moose densities out in that part of the park.
basically, the chum salmon were supporting a lot more wolves than would normally live in the region. The wolves still preferred moose and caribou, but they had something to tide them over between large kills. Adam says that has big implications.
You can't just think of wolves and ungulates being somehow separated from other things going on in the environment anymore. You know, there's another player on the stage, and it's a fish. And to wolf biologists, that's a pretty big leap.
Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist Craig Gardner uses a stronger word.
I think it's pretty revolutionary, especially speaking of interior Alaska, where we probably haven't given enough thought on the marine influence of this incredible food resource this far from the oceans.
The State Board of Game is currently considering implementing predator control in Unit 20C outside the park boundary. That's the same general area where Adams found low ungulate populations along with wolves that were eating a lot of salmon. Craig Gardner says the new research should give managers more to think about before they start any predator control program in the unit.
You know, basically it's saying that you have probably a higher wolf population than you would have normally, and they're putting a greater influence on the prey base, you know, on the moose numbers in that area than they would if the salmon weren't there. So I think you would have to probably remove a greater number of wolves than what you would suspect is because they're carrying higher numbers. But the influence of that control actually might be greater.
Lane Adams says there are large sections of interior Alaska where salmon could be playing an important role in the balance of wolves and ungulates. He says it's a lesson biologists learn over and over again. Things are always a lot more complex than you initially think they are. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Candidates vying to become the next president of the University of Alaska are on a three-day tour of the system's main campuses. The three finalists are Lisa Rosbacher, president of the Southern Polytechnic State University in Georgia, Alaska Railroad president Pat Gamble, and UA Southeast Chancellor John Pugh. They began the tour in Fairbanks yesterday, where they attended forums, talked about their visions for the university, and answered questions from the public. All three candidates emphasized the importance of the university driving Alaska's economy by educating people, supporting industry with research, and pioneering new projects. Lisa Rosbacher said a university needs to lay the groundwork for progress.
The university has to be a key player in that discussion about what the future economy of the state looks like, how to prepare for it now, how to be sure that the educational programs, the research programs, and the service programs are supporting, leading to that particular future.
Rosbacher is the only non-Alaskan in the running to be UA's next president. John Pugh, a trained social worker and former state health and social services commissioner from Juneau, stressed the importance of addressing education holistically. He says Alaska has a long way to go to improve on low high school graduation and post-secondary education attendance rates.
These aren't things we are proud of, and they're things that we, as you know, as both K-12 and the system need to work together. And the governor, with the governor's performance scholarship, has put on the table a challenge to the communities to let's upgrade, let's challenge students to take rigorous curriculum. Let's really do that. And I think we need to be in that. You know, we definitely, as a higher ed system, need to join with K-12 and the governor to really try to do that. And that is important for the future of Alaska.
Pat Gamble, a former Air Force commander, best known for running the Alaska Railroad in recent years, said his management experience would transfer well to the university. He said in all the jobs he's had, the mission has basically been the same.
I was picked to run an organization in all its facets, take care of all its people, work all of its missions, find and make sure that all of the support that's necessary to make this organization successful are in place and are attended to and are defended when the time comes to defend it. That's what I'm about, and that's what I would bring to the university system here.
The UA president candidates are in Anchorage today and will be in Juneau tomorrow for similar forums. University Board of Regents Chair Cynthia Henry says the three will be reviewed again based on feedback from this week.
what they saw that were strengths and what were challenges, and the board is very eager to hear from anyone who observed the candidates and to hear what they think. And so the plan is that we'll meet on March 15th, and we will, we hope, make a decision.
Henry says outgoing UA President Mark Hamilton will remain on duty through commencement, with the new president transitioning in sometime in June.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. ANSEP is the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, where every year Alaska Natives from all corners of the state graduate and become engineers, scientists, and physicians. Students can get involved as early as middle school, then move on to the University of Alaska Anchorage, Fairbanks, or Southeast in a program based on skill building, collaboration, and community. To learn more, search ANSEP on the web, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
An advocate for changes to the state's foster care system testified today before a Health and Social Services subcommittee. Amanda Mativier is the statewide coordinator for Facing Foster Care in Alaska. Mativier was in foster care as a teenager, and she says there are several ways lawmakers can help support youth who are trying to stay in school through the difficult process of frequent changes in foster homes and school districts. For example, Mativier says there is funding to transport kids who are in emergency foster care placement so they can stay in their current school, but it runs out too quickly.
But once they no longer qualify for that, that transportation's gone. And oftentimes foster parents don't have the ability to, you know, drive them across town every morning when they have to be at work, and so they usually end up transferring schools.
This can happen multiple times for teenagers who get shuffled around in the system and makes it hard for them to stay connected to their education. Mativier says an amendment for $50,000 for the transportation plan was added last week, and she calls that a good start. But she says they estimate the need is closer to $200,000 per year. She says another area of concern is for foster kids who make it through high school and want to go on to college or vocational school. Currently, the state provides 10 tuition waivers per year for foster youth, but Mativier says that's not enough.
We had 12 young people who applied last year, and so for youth to even graduate high school when coming out of the foster care system is a huge accomplishment, because it's incredibly difficult as they're bouncing between schools and foster homes, and so they should have the incentive and be able to be provided with something for post-secondary education.
Her testimony pointed out that foster care kids are much more likely to graduate in states with unlimited numbers of waivers, which she says can help cut down on homelessness and instability in their lives. Foster mentors can also help young people find their way through the trials of early adulthood. Mativier says although the Alaska Community Services Agency is committed to running a foster mentor program in Anchorage without additional funding, she's hopeful that lawmakers will supply $200,000 per year to help expand that program across the state.
Currently in Anchorage, they're working to get that program off the ground to get mentors for youth, but it would be great to see it statewide, especially like to have a mentor for youth who stay in a small community where there maybe aren't any other youth in foster care, I think would be ideal.
Mativier says a recent trip to Juneau to talk to legislators about the problems that young adults face as they age out of foster care was very positive. She says increasingly lawmakers seem to better understand that supporting youth as they transition out of the state system will mean less problems for them down the road. Petersburg police say they discovered the remnants of a methamphetamine lab in the woods within downtown. It's one of only two such labs authorities have found in or near the Petersburg area in at least the past decade. The Federal Drug Enforcement Agency sent in a contractor late last week to remove chemical residues and equipment found at the site, which is not far from residential neighborhoods. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Acting Police Chief Jim Agner says the site was discovered this past week by a local officer who works with the regional organization CCAD, Southeast Alaska Cities Against Drugs.
Well, what they found was the leavings of the precursors for a meth lab, and then some containers that had some unknown substances in them that appear to be meth lab or meth manufacturing leftovers.
The alleged lab was in a sort of hidden wooded area in the drainage of Hammer Slough, a creek surrounded by residential neighborhoods and the city maintenance shop. Some call the spot the Ewok Village, so named because of its resemblance to a fictional location in one of the Star Wars movies. Agner says it's become an area of illegal activity.
Many, many years ago, somebody built some tree houses down there, and they built bridges across the creek, and children played down there for years. And over the years, I mean, while children probably still play there, young adults and older adults have been using it as a place to do illegal activities.
Because of that, Agner says police periodically visit that area, but he says they discovered the lab based on a tip from the public. The combination of chemicals typically used in illegal methamphetamine production are toxic and potentially explosive. The DEA sent a federal disposal contractor team to help remove known and unknown substances from the site on Thursday. Agner said they had already contained the hazardous materials. Agner says it didn't appear that any toxic substances had been dumped on the ground or in the slough, but more work may be necessary.
The site proper was cleaned up. All those items that somebody might have tripped over and spilt on themselves are taken away. Unfortunately, any kind of contamination to the soil or the waterway, the federal team doesn't handle. The owner of the property does. And it's my understanding that the city of Petersburg owns that property, and we'll have to be looking into what it takes to make sure that it's in compliance with DEC regs.
Agner says the department has identified a suspect in the case but has not yet made any arrests.
One of the things it takes is we need to build a case that is would stand up in court. And so the department's going to be going slowly and making sure we're not making any mistakes in that investigation.
Authorities have only found one other meth lab site in the Petersburg area in the past. That was back in March 2006 along the Three Lakes Loop Road on Forest Service land. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering how public transportation benefits them, their businesses, and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, school, social opportunities, wherever people need to go. With public transportation available, the going is good. Find out more at goodgoingalaska.com. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Mobility Coalition, a nonprofit organization.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.